We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Risky Shortcut Sacks. Ethan, we got some early access info here. We've got limited drafts to be working on, and we're taking some risky shortcuts to give people a picture of what's going on in the format here.
I guess, except there's not really a shortcut. We've got 4 pages of show notes here, tons of cards that we've updated, color power rankings, archetypes to dive into. Like, feels like we got a lot of information on Wednesday, and I did a sealed for pre-release as well. But it seems like we've got a lot of updates.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I feel good about, like, we did 4 drafts on Wednesday, maybe 4, maybe 5 on Wednesday, early access day. Did not get a chance to pre-release, but I feel like I have a good picture of the format in my head. But I always feel like when we record this episode that I put takes out in the world and then just fingers crossed that, like, we got it right with the data or whatever, you know? Feels like we take a test and then we get the results, like, Wednesday or Thursday the next week once there's a few days of data rolling in.
Right, a lot happens in this first week, certainly thanks to 17 lands and also just thanks to everybody getting their hands on the cards and having opinions. And then in a couple weeks, we'll have a chance to watch the pros draft in Chicago, and that'll be really sweet to see.
I'll be watching the pros draft live in Chicago, baby. So if you're going to be at MC Chicago, hit me up. I'll be there.
That's right. That's right. I'm very jealous. I'm sad I'll be missing it. But I also feel like I wasn't that surprised by a lot of stuff. Like, I think we got, despite how I think perhaps we'll be thinking about rejiggering some things with the crash course, I feel like we got a lot right, or at least one of us. We covered the bases. One of us got a lot of things right when we were, you know, dickering and dealing over some cards and some things about rankings of colors last week. Like, I wasn't really shocked. I didn't go in and go, oh, that's how this works. Like, the big thing for me was start your engines. I feel like we/really you nailed. Like, it played out exactly how I expected it to going into the format.
Yeah, man, it's a really cool, interesting mechanic in the gameplay, because you have to first of all make an evaluation about how much do I think my opponent really cares about this, which is a cool evaluation,
like, yes,
weighting that. And then also, once you decide, do they care? Yes. How hard are you willing to try to stop them from getting counter number 4? And are you willing to give them counter number 3? Because sometimes there's non-combat ways to get number 4. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah, and I think the sooner you can realize that, like, if I found that the times where I, like, my opponent got, like, they started their engines and I was like, oh, I can't stop them from getting max speed. I'm just going to not have to worry about that. That's going to happen. Versus like, oh, I really think I can hold them off at 3 and stop them from getting max speed. And doing that calculation based on the cards you've seen or based on the colors they're in, I think really does add a fun layer of the puzzle of the games. But we're jumping the gun a little bit here, but I just haven't really gotten a chance to talk to you. I watched some of your stream on Wednesday. I think you watched one of my YouTube videos, but we haven't really gotten a chance to chat. So I'm excited to get to do that.
Yeah, this is the good stuff for sure.
This is the good stuff. All right, let's chat about the Patreon, and then we'll dive in to all of our thoughts and updates on Etherdrift. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show. If they so choose, we got a lot of great perks over at the Patreon. 2 things we want to shout out. 1 is access to the Discord, an excellent place to chat about all things Limited Magic. And I'm really excited to see the fire emojis popping off with all the channels in Etherdrift. We'll be, you know, diving into big picture stuff, card evaluations. And then once the format drops online on both Arena and Magic Online on Tuesday, we're going to get lots of what's the picks, what's the builds, help me with this, deck debriefs, and start to see the trophies roll in and see what people are having success with early. All of that is awesome. And we've also got our podcast feed, which gives you access to the episodes a day early ad-free, and also access to our weekly bonus episode, Lords Unlimited. This week, we're going to be doing a little crash course debrief, which I'm very excited about. We're going to look at the format for that. We got some really good feedback from folks, and Ben and I think because the crash course is such an undertaking, we often are just like, whew, that's over. And then when it comes up again, we're like, all right, what are we doing with this? And I think it'll be nice to have an opportunity to chat about what that's going to be like. And if you're interested in that, you can head on over and do a like week trial thing and see if that Patreon feed is going to work into your podcast listening life and get more Ethan and Ben in your ears every week. And we also want to make sure we shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Anthony, Gabe, Kevin, Alex, Tristan, Carlos, Andrew, Justin, and Jacob. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough.
Okay, so despite feeling like we got Start Your Engines and nailed that as like the major mechanic of the format, the set didn't feel as fast as I thought it was. Like, sir, there were some fast games, but more so than not, I was surprised at the amount of like 20-minute games I was having during early access.
Yeah, I was also surprised by that. I think my thought going in was that the aggro decks would have been tier one going in, and some of them are, some of them aren't, but I think more than anything, overarchingly, it just felt like if both people played to the board, you know, we talk a lot about rules of engagement, that if people play to the board, the games go a long time or can go a long time. And I think one of the things that contributes to that is vehicles. Like, it's hard when your opponent has a couple creatures and a couple vehicles to attack profitably into them if you don't yeah. have evasion, because a lot of the vehicles are like 5/4 vanilla, 6/6 vanilla, whatever. And then you always think, well, do I have attacks here? If my opponent goes like crew, block, block with their vehicles, and I push 4 damage, and my two creatures die to their two vehicles, or like I trade with one of their vehicles, one of my creatures dies, like I just can't really push the rest of the damage. And not, mm-hmm. not that vehicles are great or the focus of the set or anything, but I do think they contribute to that a little bit. At least I found myself in spots like that quite a bit in the early access.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. Let's talk about vehicles, because I think they're still not a great card in Limited, right? Like, a lot of the vehicles are clunk-tastic, and it's really easy, I think, to end up with too many in your deck.
I mean, I haven't experienced that because I don't put tons of vehicles in my deck. Maybe an average Joe, but like, I also didn't feel that from my opponents during early access. One of the coolest things about early access was all the people who were qualified for the Pro Tour Aether Drift. They had accounts, and so we were playing against like PT player 340 or PT player 80, which you didn't like because you thought it was bad TV. I loved stomping the Pro Tour players. That was by far my favorite part of early access.
Stomping nameless Pro Tour players. No, so yeah, here's my take about this, is that I agree. It is great that the Pro Tour players, one, that they get that opportunity, and two, that then the player pool is increased by like 300 people.
That was by far the best thing, was that you just didn't have to wait for drafts then.
You didn't wait, and the quality of player is drastically increased then. Like, I feel like I was playing against, like, the drafts felt competitive, and the games felt really competitive. It's just really, it's way better TV for me to be like, oh, we're facing Sam Black, or I'm facing LSV, or Caleb, or whatever, than to be like, just give them names. That's my only issue, is just name the accounts. That's all I want. I think baby steps.
Like, get them in there okay. this time. Okay. That's a lot of heavy lifting on the organizational end.
That's fair. Yeah, I'm sure that'd be too much to dole out 300 individualized accounts, but that's my preference. But yes, I think the PT players added to the pool is just a huge upgrade.
But so to get back to your point about vehicles, I think if mm-hmm. you are listening to this episode and if you are prone to putting 7 or 8 vehicles in your deck, probably don't. Like, that would be a great way to get your win rate up. And the common vehicles largely not worth it, I think. Like, yes. What you said during the crash course, you want rare and good uncommon vehicles. And there are some banger rare and good uncommon vehicles, and mm-hmm. those you should play.
Yeah, for sure.
So back to format speed, though, I think the biggest thing that has changed for me is last week, I think I projected for the data to say that Naya was going to be the top decks. Like, yeah. that is no longer the case for me, I don't think. I was pretty underwhelmed with, I didn't get to see red-white very much. I was pretty underwhelmed with red-green until I watched your draft video where you drafted red-green. And even still, like, a little bit underwhelmed with it, and certainly was underwhelmed with green-white. I would not no longer, I think, put green-white as a deck I expect to be tier one.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to toot my own horn just a little bit because I rarely get this stuff right. But I do feel like I had white in fifth place last week. And I was just like, I don't like these cards. Like, and I was wrestling with the thing that we talked about, which like the signposts look great. And they do. The green white signposts, the red white signposts are great. But like then white just really struggles to fill that in with its commons and uncommons.
Yeah, I agree. And it panned out that the uncommon signposts are not quite good enough to, I think, make those archetypes tier one. So shout out to you for sure.
Yeah. Removal, even though I felt like it was plentiful and you know, other than white, that all the colors got lots of good interaction. And maybe this was just drafting with PT players, but it felt scarce.
That's what I felt too. And I was attributing it maybe to PT players, but that seems so tough. Like it looks, it's weird. It looks like there's a normal amount of removal in the format, but like it didn't feel that way in the packs. There was a lot of time, like mid pack two, where I was like, okay, I got to find some interaction. And like, just didn't necessarily see as much interaction as you wanted in the packs. And there were multiple times in games where both me or my opponent were in a spot where like, if we have a removal spell, we're Gucci. And just like didn't have it for two or three turns. And then that like decided the game. I think that was my other biggest takeaway, was that I got to bump up interaction just because it felt hard to come by.
I felt this also in sealed. Like I was going through my pool and didn't really open a ton of interaction. I had two copies of Crash and Burn, which is the four mana, either deal six to something or blow up a vehicle in red, and sort of like put them off to the side. Like maybe I'll touch one of these. We'll see. And then after going through, I was like, oh, no. Both of these are happily going in my main deck because I just need interaction. Now, that may be a little too clunky of a spell for draft, or maybe you'll play one or whatever and then diminishing returns, etc. But like, I think that's the kind of tweaking you may need to do, or adjustment to your evaluation of removal in the set, is that, you know, even maybe even that clunky five mana black spell, the -6/-6 gain two, like, do you have to dip into that territory? No. Do you think?
I don't think so. And I was even in draft a little underwhelmed with Crash and Burn. I had a chance to play with that, but I played with it in a defensive deck, and it really felt terrible being a four mana spell that I was trying to use defensively, because so many of the cards you have to kill are the premium two drops. Like I was always trading down on mana, or trading up, however you want to think about it. I was spending more mana than what I was killing. But I think it might be okay if you were like, if it were a curve topper in a more aggressive deck, but really didn't feel good planning to use the spell defensively. It was much closer to costing five mana than it was costing three mana. And speaking of costing three mana, the murder variant, the one black destroy a creature or vehicle,
spin out.
Stonks are going up for me. Like I think the best way to describe the removal situation is I am the highest on that card I have ever been in my life, I think.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest takeaways for me. I also felt like two for ones were kind of scarce too. Where are you at on that? I know you didn't put that in your early access thoughts. I had games where like it was sort of like, because the board stall stuff happens, and then someone's like, here's a Hull Drifter, and you're like, oh, you now are up two cards on me. That feels really hard to overcome.
Yeah, I don't know that I really felt that, because when you make that statement, the two for ones were hard to come by, it makes me think of Foundations, like where it was like, you know, looting was a big deal or something. I didn't feel like we reached Foundation levels of two for ones were hard to come by, but I also played with in decks that did have some card advantage, like the blue white uncommon draw three gain three is as outstanding as we thought it was. I am a little lower, I think, on Hull Drifter. I was not impressed by Hull Drifter that much. Like, I thought it was fine, but I didn't think it was premium. But I was building more synergistic decks, I think, where I didn't feel like I was running out of steam necessarily, because I had synergy to bolster, maybe lack of multiple cards making. I don't know.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So you're thinking maybe like, are you talking about like blue white and blue black in that sense?
I think so, but I played a wide variety of decks. I played white black. That felt like it could grind really well. Like I had a lot of recursion, a lot of just, you know, like white black things going on. But I will say, I guess to that point, another card I was quite impressed by was the two and a black sorcery, draw two cards, each player loses two life, and was happy playing that.
But that, I feel like that's the same thing. If you like that card, if you're happy with each player loses two life, draw two, I think that means that two for ones are hard to come by, because if they weren't, you wouldn't care about that.
No, because that card starts your engines pre-combat. Like a way to tick
doesn't
up to
start, doesn't start your engines. Oh, it lets you get
it
to
it ticks
four.
Up to four before combat happens. Like cards that let you tick up to four before combat happens are so awesome in the format.
I will say, I think this is just my own mistake, but I definitely thought that start your engines happened in your end step. That
no.
Like it checked at the end and then was like, and now you go up to two or whatever. No, it happens immediately.
It happens immediately. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing that stood out to me, and I'm curious how this take ages, but it felt pretty balanced to me as far as archetype wise. There wasn't a ton where I was like, that really doesn't seem like it's going to get there. And I think we'll get into that when we talk about the archetypes and how just kind of how we feel about how to kind of grok the format, that sort of thing. But I was largely impressed by a lot of decks that I expected to not be good. Like I was going in low on green black, was super impressed by green black when it came together, that sort of thing. Or again, was low on cycling. I think that was wrong. I think blue and red are a couple of the best colors, and blue red cycling gets to play cards from the two best colors. I think it's going to be a great deck.
Yeah. And then tack on, if you can build like a synergy engine, the kind of version of it, then yeah, you're just off to the races. No pun intended.
I think, so speaking of synergy decks, I think that was the, if I were to put a headliner on the format right now, like to me, it's knowing whether you're trying to be synergistic, a start your engines aggro deck, or a raw card quality deck. Because I think like each of the things is centered in certain colors. Like I think the more you draft green, the more you're just independent card quality. Like you are what you have. And I think the closer you, like we talked about that spectrum of creatures to artifacts. And I think I would put the spectrum more as synergy to raw card quality now, and I think, rather than artifacts to creatures.
Yeah, I kept coming back to trying to think about the spectrum just because I like that as a way to frame the colors and how they relate to each other. And it keeps feeling to me like black is on one end and green is on the other, despite them playing well together. Like I like green black as a deck, and I think that is synergistic, but like black existing in a very either start your engines heavy pull or synergistically heavy pull with like how it's playing with artifacts with blue, or how it's playing with start your engines with red, or how it's playing with attrition and white, versus green is just like green, like good card, good rate, big stuff.
Yes.
Over here. I don't know what's in the middle between the two, but like that, those feel like the opposite ends of the format to me.
Oh, I put black smack dab in the middle. That's so interesting. So to me, to go back to our thing, if we're categorizing it as synergy on one end, raw rate on the other, I think blue is heavy synergy. So blue-black artifacts, blue-white artifact synergy, blue-red cycling synergy, and then blue-green isn't a blue deck. Blue-green is a green deck, and it is raw rate. Like all of the green decks are raw rate decks that are carried by green. So I think if you're touching green, you're a green deck in the format.
Okay.
So I got blue on one end, and then red next on the synergy end, because you've got blue-red cycling, you've got red, black, start your engines thing. And then green is red, green is just a green deck, and red, white. Like I don't love red, white, but I think there is some start your engine stuff going on there. I don't think that's crazy synergistic. And then black's in the middle, because I think black is the best support color for all of the decks, right? So you've got black playing an artifact support role with the blue cards super well. You've again with red got the start your engine synergy, and I think that's a highly synergistic aggro deck. Those pair super well together. Black also pairs well with white, which is next on the spectrum in an artifact life slash a start your engines life. And then that puts in the middle of the spectrum the Mardu color pairs, which I think are pretty synergistic and a wedge in and of themselves with like start your engines aggro-y type stuff. And then moving on to green, black also pairs the best, I think, with green as far as, you know, wanting to complement green's raw rate well while also giving you a little bit of the graveyard synergy stuff. And then I've got white and then green on the other end. And I think white's best job is probably playing well with the artifact decks. I think white does a much better job paired with blue and black than it does red and white.
Yeah, that 3-mana 2/4 in white that reduces the cost of artifacts that you can get that kiss. Like pick 11 because only one or two decks want it. But it really is such a key part of those decks, I found.
Well, also because the butt is huge. It blocks the 3/2s that are running around everywhere. Like that, white's so good when you're doing artifact stuff at slowing the game down.
Yeah, for sure.
So along with that spectrum of, you know, what we talked about, synergy to raw rate, there's some wedges in there. And I think, so the other reason I like going blue, red, black on the synergy end, I think the synergy decks are the best decks in the format right now. And so I think that Grixis Shard, while not having tons of overlap between the decks strategy-wise, all three of those color pairs are highly synergistic, and I think we're the best decks in the format live. Like, if I had to put, like, usually we try to put a stamp on, this is a Mardu format, this is a whatever format. Like, I'm going in expecting it to be a Grixis format. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as those being the premium decks. And then there's that Mardu wedge in the middle, which is start your engines, mid-rangey, still a fair amount of synergy. And then I think all of those green decks. I think if you are green, your raw card quality. And to be clear, usually we're down on green. And are you? Well, what are your thoughts on green? Because I think I'm going to do our classic thing where I am down on green with the caveat that I do think green has lots of good cards. Like, I think that is what it does. And it does get a lot of good cards. I just felt terrible drafting it. Because I felt like I was at the mercy of the packs. Like, I was like, okay, did I get good cards? Check yes. Or did I not get good cards? Check no. I didn't feel like I had tons of ways to make cards better, which I really liked from the Grixis color pairs. But I will say that armed with that knowledge, I think green's still pretty good. Like, it does get a lot of good cards at good rates.
Yeah, I mean, one, like, so there's two cards on our massive list that we need to get to of cards that impressed and cards that are movers down. So one, I must take umbrage with your movers down. Justice for Stampeding Scurryfoot, sir. You were low on this last week. You're low on this again this week, and I don't get it. I found this card extremely impressive. This is a single green 1/1 with exhaust, 3 and a green. Put a counter on this and make a 3/3 green elephant creature token. So that, I think, is still one of my top commons in the set. I think it's was as I expected it to play out. But like another card that I just found like was a massive problem, Hazard of the Dunes. I think this was on your top 10 commons list. This is the 3 and a green 4/4, trample, reach, exhaust, 6 and a green, put 3 counters on it. Like those at common, I was just like, these are problems. This is a problem for me. This like 4/4 trample reach that's threatening to become a 7/7. So I just I found that what you're talking about with like green's rate and not even at higher rarities was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I really like Hazard of the Dunes. That card was as good as I expected it to be. Stampeding Scurryfoot has been, it's fine. It's not bad. By the time that you exhaust it, though, it's a little small ball. I found the most impressed I was, I watched your red-green draft video where you had two of the uncommon and got to exhaust it for a single green because each one makes exhaust abilities cost 2 less. That was cool. Like, that made me kind of rethink red-green a little bit. And even if you have one of those and get to exhaust for 2, certainly then. But when you're spending 4 mana to exhaust it, like, it just gets, like, both of those cards get blanked by the white 2/4 that makes artifacts cost 1 less. Like, that's a problem for your green deck. Like, if that's your big play on turn 4 and you get brickwalled by one of the artifact decks, not even key commons.
This feels like a cute Dies to Doomblade argument where you're like,
No, I don't think it is. Because the artifact decks are going to be running that card and Pact All Terror is going to be all over the frickin' place as a 3 and a black 3/4 artifact creature. That card's insane. Like, it just doesn't attack through those. And those are the kind of cards you're going to be up against.
Another thing that I want to shout out about Scurryfoot is its combo with Elvish Refueler, which lets you exhaust stuff multiple times. Like, I faced that, I think, my first game. My opponent assembled that and was just like, I'm just gonna make an elephant every turn. And that felt tough because then you feel like you have to interact with one of those two cards and interaction is at a premium. And like, I don't know, I'm still a big fan of the Scurryfoot myself.
I agree. Like, I want to be clear that I don't think it's a bad card. It has just moved down from, like, I thought it was going to be super important to the green decks, like that you would feel terrible about not having Stampeding Scurryfurter, that it was going to be a key common. So I guess I would have expected going in. No, I think I thought Hazard of the Dunes was better.
But yeah, you didn't have Scurryfoot on your top 10.
Yeah, okay. I guess I hate Scurryfoot. I don't know.
But that's what I'm saying. And I think you're wrong. That's all I'm saying.
That's the thing. I don't hate it. I just think it's a fine card. Like, I don't think it is a format-defining card. I guess that's what I would say. And it feels like if you were saying I shouldn't have it on the movers down, that you do think it is.
Yeah, I had it on my top 10. I would keep it on my top 10 this week.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But I hear what you're saying about green otherwise. And it's tough because green white was a deck that I think we were both like, oh, this is going to just hit so hard. And it just doesn't feel like it does.
Well, it's the Lagorin lottery. Like, either you play Lagorin on turn two and it doesn't die, which is the signpost uncommon. Green white for a 1/1 flyer. Whenever it attacks while saddled, you put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to two target mounts or vehicles with a saddle cost of one. Like, either it curves out with that into a mount and is pretty impressive, or you don't draw Lagorin and your deck is mopey as all get out. Like,
yeah,
it's green paired with other cards from white that aren't that good. And even the Lagorin starts are pretty easily defeatable if you have a removal spell or a good start yourself.
Yeah. With Valentine's Day this week, it's a good time to acknowledge our unique love languages. And I think there's one we can all agree on: the love of sound. Discover true love's perfect pair, Raycon's Everyday Earbuds.
Raycon's Everyday Earbuds are your perfect partner for the gym, work, or phone calls, offering premium audio that goes where you go.
Their latest model is better than ever, with a 32-hour battery life and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. And speaking of battery, with Raycon's quick charge function, just 10 minutes of charging yield 90 minutes of battery.
I love these earbuds. I've been a bit of a boomer in that, like, I've had, it's still now, like, a wireless earbud. I've been pretty old school with my earbuds and received these to try them out, and I fell in love. It was a life-changing experience to be able to have the earbuds in my ear. They stayed in. They didn't fall around. They weren't jostly. It immediately synced to my Bluetooth with no effort on my part. We got snowed in by a blizzard, and I was out, like, happily shoveling snow, listening to my podcast. Just the sheer flexibility and ease of use that these provide is outstanding. 5 stars, 2 thumbs way up, whatever you want to say. I love these earbuds.
These earbuds also come with active noise cancellation, which is often difficult to find at an accessible price point, but not with Raycon, which starts at just half the price as other premium audio brands.
Raycon's Everyday Earbuds are also available in a variety of vibrant colors, so if you want to match your sleeves or playmat, you can keep everything on theme.
And if you don't fall in love with your Raycons, they offer a 30-day happiness guarantee return policy, no questions asked.
Go to buyraycon.com/LOL to get up to 20% off site-wide.
That's right, you'll get up to 20% off everything on Raycon's website, including 20% off all headphones, too, when you go to buyraycon.com/LOL.
buyraycon.com/LOL. And now, back to the show. So we're starting to get into individual cards, and I think all that stuff is good and important to talk about, but I want to take a step back to we've talked a lot about the colors on that line spectrum of synergy to raw rate, but just to get into some updated color rankings and just kind of what the colors do, I would still have blue number one, I think. The artifact synergy stuff was as real as I thought it was going to be, and then alongside that, seeing blue-red cycling get there as an archetype as well. And not that it's all in on cycling synergy or discard synergy or whatever, but that knowing that the artifact decks and blue-red are all premium decks, I think makes me really excited about drafting blue.
I'm going to keep peppering in some individual cards as we're talking about these, if that's please. All right with you. So I agree that I still like blue. One thing that I'm having a hard time with is that two cards that I expected to perform well that I don't think did, that you also put on the movers down list independent of me, are Nimble Thopterist and Trip Up. So Thopterist is the 3 and a blue, 3/2, make a 1/1. And Trip Up is the TOB spell, copyright Lords Limited. It's the top or bottom blue spell with cycling 2. Expected both of those to be top commons in the format. And I was woefully underimpressed by both of them during early access.
I agree with that thought. Also, we had a suggestion in the Lords of the Discord for Tobo. I hate to break it to you, but I like Tobo a lot better than T-O-B. Just Tobo. Tobo flows.
What is T-O-B-O. What's the second O?
Top or bottom? Tobo. T T-O-B-O. Oh, top, bottom. Top, like toe bottom.
Yeah. Tobo. I don't like it, but you don't like it? If you want to float it, we can see what the take it to we'll the get Twitter a Twitter polls.
Poll. Yes, there we go. That's what the people need.
Okay, everyone's going to be like third option. I hate this nickname.
So I will say fair that those cars moved down, and I hear that, but also moved down in the sense of like Stampeding Scurryfoot in the. I don't think they're key players necessarily, but they're still fine cards that you're willing to play in your deck. You just don't go after them. But in Blue's defense, on the movers up, Flood the Engine, I think, is close to a premium removal spell in the format.
Yes.
Two and a blue for an aura, enchant creature or vehicle. When it enters, tap enchanted permanent. An enchanted permanent loses all abilities and doesn't untap during its controller's untap step. That's basically sorcery speed murder in the format. And then if you're right about Hull Drifter, also... That's another boon in Blue's favor, the 3-blue, 3-2 flyer vehicle. ETBs, draw 2 cards, crew 3. I think there's some stuff to be said there.
That's fair, yeah. I just was like, I still like Blue, but that was one of the things I was having to calibrate for in real time. Like, my first few drafts, I was like, what is Nimblethopterus doing here? Pick 9, pick 10. And then I was like, oh, maybe this card just isn't as good as I think it is.
It's a C+. Like, it doesn't pull you into... I would have thought it would have pulled you into Blue.
I would have, too.
I was expecting it to be like, what was the card from Phyrexia will be one?
But I think I think it's less... Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Chimney Rabble or whatever.
Yeah.
The 3-3 haste. I think it's even less than a C+. Like, because... Or it's like a C+ in 2 decks. Like, Blue-Black really wants it.
Yes.
I'm not sure any other color pair...
Really cares, wants it.
Cares that much about Nimble
Thought. Actually, I think Blue White wants it more than Blue Black. But yeah, I agree. It might be a C or worse if you don't care about the artifact synergy. But
yeah,
still a fine card. I guess I agree. I'm not hung up, and I'm not like going to defend Nimblethopterus' honor that much. I think a fine card. And like, I don't want to course correct too much on it.
It's closer to, like, it's funny because as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, it's kind of the same as Scurryfoot. Like, yeah, Scurryfoot costs 1 up front, but then it's 4 mana for a 3-3 and a 2-2. And this is 4 mana for a 3-2 and a 1-1 flyer.
So why
pretty
do you
similar.
Like Scurryfoot, huh?
I don't know.
Anyway, got him.
Yeah, you got me.
But I think rather than getting hung up on individual cards, the thing I want to put out into the world about Blue is that I think Blue is the best color in the format at bringing the value of cards up. Like, Blue lets you make cards that other people wouldn't necessarily want into cards that are... premium or important for your deck. And I think that's really important to be able to do in the format.
And all 4 decks have felt good so far. Like, Blue-Red really impressed. I got to draft one of my, I think my best deck that I drafted all early access was Blue-Green. Shout out to Blue-Green. Blue-Black Artifacts has been nuts. And even Blue-White, I think, is very good.
Yeah. So Blue number 1, I think Red number 2. Again, I was very impressed by the discard synergies. And I think Red's a great aggressive color in Red-Black. Was not super impressed by red white, but like have a history of underrating that deck and don't really want to. So I'm going to like still be going into the format, assuming that red white's going to get there as an aggro deck. And I think if all 3 of those decks are good and the Starcher Engine stuff is good, red just has a lot of banger uncommons as well. So I still like red in second. How are you feeling about that?
I love red. I mean, I almost want red in first, like, because I also like in theory, I hear all you're saying about feeling a little hesitant about red white, but I like all of red's decks in theory, and I love how red gets to play with everything going on in the format, with cycling, with start your engines, with exhaust. Like, I just think it gets to be at the intersection of a lot of that stuff,
but it doesn't get to play with artifacts. Like, I like the artifacts decks are so good. Like, they were as good as I expected in early access, actually better, because I don't think I was high enough on Pact Altair. That card's black mover up for me. I've got black in third place now. I think it is by far the best support color in the format, and it gets so many glue cards. Stuff like the 1/3 flyer for 1 and a black, Surveil 2. Like,
so
it's insane in artifacts. It's insane in red black Starcher Engines. It's great in green black graveyard to bin 2 things with a Surveil. Like, it just gets cards that fit tons of different places really well. Like, it's all of its color pairs are good. And I think it is good at supporting the other colors in each of its color pairs.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And then green, I would say at 4th place for me currently, with the caveat of, you know, we do the thing on Lords, Flimited, where next week we're going to tell you that green is great. But I do probably think green's a better intrinsic color than black, but I just don't, like, I don't expect me personally to go into the format drafting green because I felt so miserable just being at the mercy of the quality of the cards I got rather than being able to draft to make cards good. So I'm going after the Grixis colors, I think, in week one, knowing that green is likely better than black as a color, but I don't want to draft it and like the whole, you know, take the cards you want to draft thing. But the green cards are very good. Like I don't want to people's takeaway to be, oh, green's bad, don't draft green. Like I'm pretty high on green's individual cards. Mm-hmm. And then white, I'm pretty down on. Like the thing you talked about, the uncommons did not get there. The gold uncommons did not do enough to pull white's just average card up.
Yeah. Well, I think it also really hurts that white doesn't get any good removal, really.
That's fair. The exile removal spell is actually good enough, like actually good.
Yes.
That's a card you want. The four and a white exile something, and it costs three less if it's an attacking creature or if it's tapped. Is it tapped or an attacking creature?
Tapped, yeah.
But the other thing that's weird about white is I think white also is the most pushed vehicle-wise, and vehicles aren't great. You know what I mean? And then yes. you almost have to be artifact stuff, like blue-white to be happy playing that number of vehicles. And
even then,
it can get a little awkward. Yeah, so pretty down on white. So we've got some updated archetype power rankings here. Tier 1, I think obvious from what we've talked about this format so far, but three of the blue decks, blue-black, blue-red, blue-white. Would you put blue-green in Tier 1 also?
I might. I would not put... You have blue-white as the fourth deck there. I would not. I would put that in Tier 2. I think blue-white is... good, not great. But okay. So I don't know if I'd put blue-green. Blue-green or green-black. I like both of those decks, I think, more than blue-white currently.
Yeah. And then red-black. I think red-black is insane as a Start Your Engines aggro deck. I had a premium red-black deck. I saw you piloting a red-black deck that looked nuts. I faced lots of red-black decks that were great. Super impressed with red-black in early access. And then movers up, green-black, blue-green to Tier 2, maybe Tier 1. Red, white, and white, black living in Tier 2 as well. And then, like, just contrary to what I thought, like, I've got green, white, and green, red in the bottom grouping going into the format.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, green, white is my vote for worst deck in the format right now.
Okay. Yeah, and maybe red, green is Tier 2.
But to go back to your earlier point, it feels close.
Yes.
Nothing feels... I think outside of green white, which might even still have some play to it, like everything feels viable and good and pretty close. Like we're giving these marked Tier 1, Tier 2, but like I think it's all gravy right now.
Sure. Yeah. Like certainly if green black is open in your seat, like you want to draft green black rather than trying to force your way into blue black or blue red or something.
Yeah.
And to your point about the vehicle we posed last week in the crash course, like are you really going to jump ship for that two black, black, green, green vehicle? I think the answer might be yes at this point. Like if you're seeing pack of graveyard thing, and then you see that and you think maybe you can wheel some of the graveyard stuff, I might be willing to jump ship for that card at this point.
Well, so there's the 5-mana Zombify that makes a pilot token. The fact that any black deck can play that with the cycling vehicle, like you don't have to, it's not really a black green card in that sense. It's like just sort of a little pocket of synergy card if you get that 5-mana spell, which you can, I think.
Sure, you're still wanting to put it in black green. You're not running that as a package in a black blue deck or something.
Why not? Why can't I do that?
It's cycling too is a huge cost to pay if you don't hit your 2-card combo.
Okay, well, I'm just telling you that I like that as just a little package for myself. Yeah,
cool. Just to talk broadly about the mechanics, I think before we get into the individual cards, also we've sung an ode to Start Your Engines, and not that it's crazy powerful, it's just really well done as a mechanic, I think. It's a super real threat in Mardu decks, and they give you cards to try to get it turned on, and it's good at getting it turned on by, like, you know, we were talking about, like, how early does this happen? The Mardu decks get it by turn 4, turn 5 pretty consistently, and if you're playing with Mardu, you really want to build your deck such that you're going to get Start Your Engines. And if you're playing against Mardu and you have the opportunity, I think you really want to try to stop your opponent from getting max speed.
Yes, right. So the Mardu decks, it's more just about like it's going to give all of their cards or half their cards like this little bump. And then there's a fun puzzle that we alluded to before of like if you're playing against black green, and they're starting their engines. You're like, what do you got over there? You got an Hour of Victory? You got Demonic Tutor that you can use? Or is this just sort of like a misplaced thing? You know, if they play the 2 and a green 3/3 with Start Your Engines, part of that cycle of max speed, exile from your yard to draw a card thing. Like, I think that's a fun thing. But what you're talking about with Mardu decks is like, you really want to, if you can, stop them from getting there. But a lot of times you just can't, because there's so many. Once they've started them, even if you've got the board gummed up, there's so many other ways to get damage done.
You're not going to be able to stop it completely. It's like the Democrats in Congress right now. Like, you're just going to be able to delay it for a couple days, you know? Like, you're not going to be able to get there totally.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. No, it's fine. We can leave it in. Why not?
But I think the coolest thing about Start Your Engines is the ability to set up turns where you start it and get it up to 2. Like, that's what you have to do to get to 4 early. Is you either want like a 1-drop that's going to be able to get in. That's a great way to get there early also. But either playing on turn 3, like maybe you play a random 2-drop that doesn't start your engines, and on turn 3 you play something like Hour of Victory that does start your engines, and then you've got an attack with your 2-drops. So you get it started, crank it up to 2 that way, or you play a 2-drop that's got Start Your Engines, and then turn 3 maybe you play a removal spell or something to make sure that you can get in an attack. Like, getting a 1-2 punch turn is really important, like getting it started and ticking it up to 2. When you do that, the threat is very omnipresent.
Yes. And then just being, you know, you've been singing Pactol Terror's praises all episode, and this is an excellent way to do that. This is the 3 and a black 3/4 artifact. Whenever it or another artifact enters under your control, you drain your opponent for 1. Finding the non-combat ways to hit max speed, either pre-combat or just as the game progresses, is really important too.
Yep.
This came up for me. There's only one way to do this, but paying life for ward costs on your opponent's turn will increase their speed, just as a safety tip out there. If you're going to kill something that has you paying life as part of the ward cost, do it on your turn so you don't increase your opponent's speed.
Yeah. So I think Start Your Engines is really cool. Like, ranges from like a one-off card to full in on the decks. And I think the gameplay stuff with it is really good. And it doesn't feel snowball-y so much. It just feels... once it hits, the cards are just better.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you can't win when your opponent hits max speed. Like, you can win through your opponent having max speed. Their stuff just gets a boost.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough when you got the goodies like Hour Victory. That's the Demonic Tutor one. 3-mana 2/2.
The card's so
like,
good.
That feels a little bit like, I've been playing some March of the Machine flashback, and people have been asking, like, oh, like, I didn't play with battles. Like, what's that like? And I'm like, most of them are bad, and then some of them like make your life total 4, because when they flip, you lose. Like, and some Start Your Engine stuff does feel like that. Like, most of it's like, oh, you just got a little boost, and then you're like, wait, you get to do what now? You get to just draw a card, an extra card every turn? Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah. The exhaust cards, rather than the teamer decks being exhaust decks, the exhaust cards are just good late game sinks, right? Like, and occasionally you run into synergy stuff with the exhaust things, but I don't think you should think about green red or green blue particularly as being exhaust decks. You're just drafting really good cards, and the exhaust cards are good cards, and then whatever synergies come along the way, you're happy with.
It's hard to not, like, it's chicken and egg, right? It's hard to not think about blue green and red green as exhaust decks, because all 4 signposts care about or have exhaust. And so, like, it's just hard. Like, if you're in those decks, it's hard for you not to end up with some kind of exhaust synergy. It just doesn't end up feeling as greater than the sum of its parts as the Grixis decks.
Yes, that's what I would be getting at, for sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Discard and cycling, very impressed. Like, and not necessarily so impressed with the synergy. It felt like packages of synergy that were powerful that you could include in a deck that just got to play great cards from the 2 best colors in the format.
Yeah. So, like, things like the Marauding Mako, the 1-drop that grows, or Blue's 1/2 flyer that grows every time you discard, that we were like, these are rewards, not reasons. Like, C pluses, not pulls into those decks. Are you still feeling that way about those cards?
I feel that way about the Mako for sure. The blue one, I think, is a little bit better than the Mako. The 1/2 flyer. That growing into a 2/3 the first time you cycle is pretty big game, I think. And both of them are good in the deck. But I think the thing I was worried about with the deck, that it was going to be a glass cannon centered around those two cards. And that just couldn't be further from the truth. The deck is very resilient. It can play offensively. It can play defensively. It gets to hold up mana a ton and just gets to play great cards. I was impressed.
It's very hard. I think we'll talk about some of the overperformers in the deck, but it's just very hard to play against because of what you're talking about. It has reach thanks to the 1/4 that every time you discard a card, it pings your opponent. And so like it can really
that
just...
That card has reach?
No. In the sense of
like can push some damage. So I was like, wait, what?
No. The 5-mana 4/5 does though. That
card's been impressive. Yeah, there's a 4 and a red, 4/5 reach that every turn you can discard a card to draw a card for free. Card was chef's kiss. Just a 5-drop that you are happy to put in your deck.
I played against Sam Black and he had 4 of those in his deck. And I was like, stop, please stop casting these. Yeah, so good.
And lastly, vehicles. We've kind of already talked about vehicles, but I think just be cognizant of putting great vehicles in your deck and not putting mediocre vehicles in your deck.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious advice, but good advice to state.
All right, it's time. Let's get into the individual cards.
Okay, cards we haven't talked about yet. Vanilla Legends.
I love these Vanilla Legends. They're such good designs.
Shout out to you about the 08. I played that in my sealed deck, in my little at-home pre-release, and it was awesome.
Yeah, it's very, very good if you want to slow the game down. It's pretty embarrassing against flyers, but if you can figure out ways to mitigate that, just a premium card for a defensive deck. The only one that really falls flat is red, the 4/1. The 1 black 7/2 in black, like that hits hard. And, you know, in tandem with format all-star rocket launcher, whatever it's called, what's the vehicle?
Burner rocket.
Thank you. Format all-star burner rocket. This is the 1 in a red 3/2 flash. When it ETBs, something gets +2/+0 and trample, and it's got a crew cost of 1. It's really good in tandem with the 1 black 7/2. I had the pleasure of that in my red black deck. So I've already put format all-star. I already forgot the name of it in a rocket burner.
Burner rocket. Burner Say its rocket. Name.
Say its name. I got to give it its due respect. I truly still kind of feel similarly about that card, which is you'll play it when it's right to play it, but not an intrinsically great Magic card. But shout out to you, Scary Terry, the 2GGG 97. It's huge.
It's so big. It's really big.
Also really good in tandem with +2/+0 and trample. And what usually happens is like you take 9 or you do 9 damage. And then, like, it's like, okay, you did that once. What are you going to do the next time? It's very large. I love that cycle of vanilla cards. Super cool.
But you don't love the tutor, right? You don't like the Fang Guardian, the 2/4 reach that can search up the vanilla creatures?
I don't like it that much. I mean, it's a good card. Like, I think you're always going to play it. I just don't think it pulls you into green. And certainly if your fail case is getting the 1 in a green 3/2 common green card, it is not good then. Like that is not close to a relevant play for the power level or the synergy level of the format.
Correct. Like, yeah, you want to make sure you have the Terry in your deck.
Yes. If I have either one of the other, like the tutor or the 9/7, super in on that. Like that is really good. But just the 2/4 as a tutor for a vanilla card in general, that I don't think meets the power level requirements of the format.
Yep.
All right. Next up, Momentum Breaker. This is one of the cards I was talking about that I didn't shout out, but that I was thinking of. Like these turns of 1/2 punches for Start Your Engines, like playing a 2-drop and then playing a removal spell like this or the red one. So Momentum Breaker is 1 in a black enchantment, Start Your Engines. When ETBs, each opponent sacks a creature or vehicle of their choice. Each opponent who can't discards a card. Then you can pay 2, sacrifice it to gain life equal to your speed. Like playing a 2-drop, then playing Momentum Breaker on 3, so that your 2-drop has a clear attack and you get a 1/2 punch to tick up your start your engines. Like Momentum Breaker is a premium card for red, black or black, white.
Yeah. Next, we've got Risen Necro Regent, 4 in a black, 5/4 with start your engines and max speed. At the beginning of your end step, you make a 2/2 black zombie creature token. I love this. You're calling it Grave Titan.
This card is Grave Titan. Have you played with or against this much?
I have unfortunately played against it and just felt like, what am I supposed to do?
The Start Your Engines cards, the ones that we ticked off as like the ones that matter, this, the 3/4 that draws you a card every turn, an Hour of Victory, those three cards are worth building towards. They're excellent and cool in that you're likely to get them pretty late. Like Risen Necro Regent is not a premium card if you're not good at enabling start your engines before it comes down. Like, you want it to come down and make a 2-2. And if it doesn't, it's not a premium card. It's like a C or whatever. Yeah. But if you can consistently get it down with max speed, either hitting or imminent, it's like a B. It's really good.
Yep. Yeah, I love this card.
Can we talk about Pact Altair in depth?
Sure.
Three and a black, 3/4 artifact creature. When this creature or another artifact you control enters, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. I think this is the single biggest mover up of the format for me. This is so incredible. It's insane in blue black. It's very good in black, white, and red black. And black, white also can do a thing where, like, your artifacts, like most of your deck is artifacts, because you can pull the white cards and black's got enough that you can also be a black-white artifacts deck that has Start Your Engine synergy. And then Pact Altair is outstanding there as well, because it does it all. The only place you aren't excited about it is green-black. But again, like, that's a green deck more than it is a black deck, so that checks out for me. But the body is huge. It dodges Lightning Strike. And it frequently is drain one, gain one every turn. And sometimes in the good decks, like two a turn. And once you're doing two a turn, and I think the thing that is hard to wrap your brain around is it's hard to kill. Like, we've talked about, like, removal is tough, or it certainly felt that way. Like, I just kept expecting my Pact Altairs to die. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard card to kill. Like, Lightning Strike doesn't get it. Grimbauble doesn't get it.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And once you get two of them, like when you play the second one, you get a drain two, gain two immediately. And then every artifact you play, like, they just stack so well. It is, I think, I would have it as one of the top commons in the format, I think, for me right now.
That's what I was going to try and ask you. So black's got a lot to like at common. Grimbauble, we've shouted out, a single black -2/-2. Spin Out being a mover up for us, the one black, kill a creature or vehicle at instant speed. Wreckage Wickerfolk is on this list, and I like this card a lot. This is the one in a black 1/3 flyer, ETB Surveil 2. It's also an artifact creature. Those are all four pretty darn good commons for black. Can you give me a loose ranking here? Like, where is Pact Altair number one for you?
Pact Altair would be number one for me because of how hard I want to go after the artifact decks. And I think it is the best card for the artifact decks. And I've been a little underwhelmed with Grimbauble. Like, I think Grimbauble is great. I do think you have to be artifact synergy to really, like, put Grimbauble at, like, pulling you into black type stuff. But it has matchups where it's really underwhelming. Like, it's really sad against any green deck. And like, against the cycling deck, sometimes those payoff grow out of range. I felt it not having flash, which is ridiculous to say about the card, because the card does so much for one mana.
The fact that it's not a trick.
Yeah, the fact that it's not instant, like, it's not shock. Like, it doesn't catch you up when your opponent is on the play, like, and they, well, like, it kind of does. But you know what I'm saying. I just felt pulled, and I'm not saying it is a bad card. It's a very good card.
No, but the point you're making is true, that, like, the thing that Shock gets to do, or the thing that Stab gets to do in Foundations, is you're on the draw,
right? And your opponent plays their turn two thing, and then you Shock their thing, and you have tempo back. Grimbauble doesn't do that for you, because you have to do it on turn two.
That is a really good point that I did not. Like, I didn't think about how massive the difference between that being sorcery speed versus instant speed is in that specific situation.
Yeah. Which is a knock against the card. And then that, and the fact that it lines up poorly against some of the decks that are good decks. Like, green black's a great deck. Green blue's a good deck. Like, it's tough. And you're always playing it. I just am a little lower on it than I was going into the format after playing with and against it quite a bit. So I do think, to answer your question, Pact Altair 1. And then probably still Grimbauble 2, but I would not be shocked if Spin Out started to move ahead of Grimbauble for me. Would not be shocked at all. And then I think the 1/3 Surveil 2 in last place, but still absolutely premium. And, like, could see instances of picking them all ahead of each other.
Yeah, Wreckage Wickerfolk is just a big mover up for me. I know you had this on your top 10 list last week, and it definitely would be in my top 10. It's just so hard for me to imagine taking a 4-drop over a 2-drop. But if you're right about the Pact Altair being that high, I got to calibrate.
Takes us on to Magmakin Artillerist. This is 2 red for a 1/4 common. Whenever you discard one or more cards, this creature deals that much damage to each opponent. It's got cycling for 1 red. And whenever you cycle this card, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. I think it's easy to look at this and say, blue, red, gold card. But it's, I think you're playing it in any red deck that's not red, green, probably, because when you cycle itself, it dealing that damage and ticking you up to your 4th max speed before combat happens is, I think, really good for red, black, and red, white as well.
I got to blow out my opponent. I was on max speed 3 and was attacking with the red, black signpost that gets
give it death touch instant speed.
And so I got to do that in combat. So yeah, you can do some nasty things with the Artillerist, just being able to cycle it.
So yeah, I've been very impressed with it.
Outpace Oblivion, 2 red for an enchantment, starts your engines. When it enters, deals 5 damage up to 1 target creature or planeswalker, and 2 sack it to have it deal 2 damage to each player who doesn't have max speed. This card rules. I had it as my top red uncommon last week. I love this card. It's like, does your 1/2 start your engines thing perfectly. Removal is a premium, plus this doing the start your engines thing. This card's excellent.
Well, like it almost ticks you up 3 times, right? Because it's really good at setting up, starting it, getting in damage that turn, and then the following turn, like, you can deal 2 out of combat. Like, it's gross. Like, I don't think I had put all that together about the card, and that in tandem with us just being higher on removal in general, like, I would expect Outpace Oblivion to be one of the best uncommons in the format, I think.
Yep.
All right, let's talk some green-black cards here, because there's a lot of cards that really get there because green black gets there as an archetype, I think. So the first is Dredger's Insight, the 1 green enchantment. Whenever an artifact or creature leaves your graveyard, you gain a life. That's super nice, not flavor text. And whenever it enters mill 4, you can put an artifact, creature, or land from among the milled cards into your hand. Like, that card is outstanding in green black. And that's the kind of thing where, like, if I'm not green and I see a Dredger's Insight go by, and then all of a sudden I see that vehicle, like, you might start thinking about audibling into green black.
Well, and one combo that I want to talk about that I had the pleasure of piloting was with Earth Rumbler, which is we knew this card was going to be good. 4 green, 7/6, Vigi Trample, crew 3 vehicle, but you can crew it for free, air quotes, by exiling an artifact or creature from your graveyard. I had this in a green black deck with 2 Dredger's Insights. And I just got to sometimes be like, okay, gain 10. Like, just eggs. Because you can just repeatedly crew it.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I just, like, I got in situations where I was being able to, like, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to trade this off right now. But before that, I'm going to gain 10 by exiling 5 things from my yard.
That's insane. Like, that's super cool. But also the other thing, we knew Earth Rumbler was going to be a good card, but we saw that and saw that as a good card, but I think your expectation is, but its deck is going to flop. So ergo, like, it gets bumped down. And no, the deck isn't a flop. So ergo, it gets bumped up, I think.
I think it gets bumped up, certainly in green, black, but I think you're just playing
just a fine card. You're just playing any green deck.
Because you're going to, by that time, you'll have some stuff in your yard. And even if it's just 1 free crew, it's enough because the card is huge.
And another card, and I hadn't quite put this together about this card, is Molt Tender. Single green for the uncommon, tap to mill a card, tap to exile a card from your graveyard, add 1 mana of any color. You comped this to the oil card from, for actually all be one, but you can also just fuel Molt Tender with other cards. Like, the Pothole Mole fuels Molt Tender, or Dredger's Insight fuels Molt Tender. Like, it's really strong in green black.
Yes, I agree.
All right, next up we've got Grim Javelineer. 2 black for a 3/2 common. Whenever you attack, target attacking creature gets +1/+0 until end of turn. When that creature dies this turn, surveil 1. This looks like the filleriest of filler, and it is so much better than that. And not, this is not a high pick, but it's such a good 22nd, 23rd type card in almost every black deck. Like, the blue-black decks have Thopters running around, that turning those into 2/1 flyers is cool. You value the surveil in green black. It helps give your creatures attacks in red black and black white to start your engines. There's some Thopters running around in black white. Just the pre-combat, like, it comes down, does a thing, and then the surveil is just so nice. Really love Grim Javelineer.
I'm percolating on. I feel like we need to start giving an award out in 50 takes to, like, the most 22nd, 23rd card you're happy with. And Grim Javelineer fits that bill. Next up, I got to watch you play this. Was this your first deck that had Aether Siphon? The 1 blue artifact?
Yeah, my very first draft deck in the format, yeah.
So this is one blue artifact. Start your engines. Two tap, draw a card. And max speed, whenever you draw a card, each opponent mills two cards. You had two of them, right? And it was good.
Two of them and it was good. I mean, I will say, to tamper expectations, like, I think either Siphon is playable in the format, which is a boon for the format. Because I would have said, like, you're significantly hurting your win percentage if you're putting either Siphon in your deck. I no longer think that's the case. Like, two tap draw card, assuming you do work to slow the game down, that's a good effect for the format.
It might be because it's hard to get two for ones in the format, you might say. That are repeatable.
Oh, two for ones. Yeah. You could say that. A person could say that. Okay. Maybe they did earlier in the episode. I don't know. But I do think that effect you're interested in. If you can do the work to slow the game down, and you can do the work to slow the game down. And I don't, like, then this can be a win con. Like, certainly in the deck I drafted a double Aether Siphon, blue-red cycling control deck where these were my win cons. It went 4-3, like, against PT-level competition. Like, certainly think it gets there. And once you hit max speed, trivially easy with two of them on the battlefield to mill your opponent out instantly because you're milling four per draw.
Well, the thing about it is, because of Pactol Terror and Magmakin Artillerist, I think blue-black and blue-red have weight. Like, what I was worried about was, I was like, this is a card that doesn't help you get max speed and is like such a late game card where you don't want to be attacking. And Pactol Terror and Artillerist let you build those decks such that you can get max speed without attacking.
Yes. And that was the thing that my deck was missing, because it was my very first draft deck of the format, was I was not great at getting to max speed. Like, I wanted the Artillerist and didn't see any, and I was blue red. So I did struggle at times to turn on max speed, but it was also just good enough in a slow deck as two tap draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy with that effect. So I do think Aether Siphon is real, and not that it's going to be a premium build around, but certainly a thing that you can do and is a problematic card.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's tough about it is it's tough to build around it because there's so many things that blow up artifacts, like in the format everywhere. So if you like build an Aether Siphon deck, like, I don't think you want it to be the linchpin piece of your deck necessarily.
Yeah, you don't want to be in a spot where if they blow it up, you're like, oh, I actually can't win now.
Right. It's not like you're picking Aether Siphon and you're drafting an Aether Siphon deck. You're drafting a control deck. And you will probably play the Aether Siphon that you see in that deck.
Yes. Good caveat.
Guidelight Optimizer is up next. This is one and a blue for a 2/1 artifact creature robot. You can tap for a blue, spend this mana only to cast an artifact spell or activate an ability. This card does work. You got to play to the board early. It's an artifact for the artifact synergy decks, and it's a mana dork for the exhaust decks. This is like similar to the 1/3 Surveil 2 being a glue card for black decks. This is a great, great glue card for the blue artifact decks and then blue-green exhaust. Also helps you cycle for the cycling decks, right? That's activating an ability.
Correct.
I haven't done that yet, but also does double duty in blue-red cycling.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Transit Mage is 2 and a blue for a 2/2. When this enters, you can search your library for an artifact card with mana value 4 or 5, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. I mean, this is not surprising that this is a really good card, right?
Not surprising that it's a really good card, but it's basically another copy of Pactol Terror, which is super important. Like, this grabbing Pactol Terror is outstanding. Like, that you get a common card that's premium that you can reliably get.
Yeah. Yeah. I had it in a deck with two Spike Shell Harriers. So I was.
That card is also super gross, but we thought that card was going to be gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next up, we've got Chitin Gravestalker. This is 5 and a black for a 5/4 insect creature at common. Costs 1 less cast for each artifact or creature card in your graveyard, and it's got cycling 2. Shout out to you. I think this card is a common build around for the format, not like Talarian Terror levels of good, but like the kind of card that you're clocking one in pack one, and then maybe you see one pick 7 and you're like, okay, I'm in. You wheel the other one, and then after you've got a couple, you can kind of go hard after them. It's, I think, largely a green black gold card, but it gets there in green black.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I've liked that card. I feel like I'm going to be on an island with this next one. And this feels, again, like maybe 22nd, 23rd type card territory. Beast Rider Vanguard, 1 and a green, 2/2, and it has 4 and a green. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. You can reveal a permanent from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. I assumed this was going to be nothing, like basically F levels of never put it in your deck. The confluence of removal feels scarce and card advantage feels good means that when my opponents played this during early access, I was not happy.
I agree. You're not on an island. I didn't play with it, but it was a problem. I had to spend a 4-mana removal spell on it several times, which was embarrassing. Like, it didn't feel great.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't think it's premium, but I think green decks will play that card.
Yeah. Yeah. And lastly, I have Howler's Heavy, the 3 and a blue 3/4. But mostly because of cycling one in a blue, and when you cycle it, target creature or vehicle an opponent controls gets -3/-0 until end of turn. Like that, the 2-mana thing gets -3/-0 draw card. That has been an impressive trick, and especially impressive in cycling.
Yes. So Howler's Heavy versus Nimblethopterist, where are you at?
I kind of feel like I'm supposed to take Howler's Heavy. I don't like Thopterist currently.
I kind of agree.
Which is weird.
I would not have thought that prior to you talking about Howler's Heavy here, but I kind of think that.
Yeah. All right. Those are all the movers up that we wanted to talk about.
So movers down, Gastel Raider, point for you, 2 and a black, 2/1, start your engines. When it ETBs, target opponent reveals their hand, you choose an instant or sorcery card, player discards that card, max speed, this gets +1/+1, and menace. I think you're always playing this card in black decks, but it's not a high pick.
Really?
Yeah. Because when it hits, it's insane. It doesn't hit that often, but when it hits, it's insane. When you miss, it feels pretty bad, but I think you're willing to take that risk also in black decks. Certainly, okay, you're not playing it all black decks. You're playing it in black, red, and black, white. I think you would play it in
every black, yeah, every black, red deck I would buy.
Black, red, black, white. But again, not premium. You're not picking it highly. If you don't end up with it, not a huge deal.
Yeah. We've talked about moving down on Grimbauble. Dynamite Diver, this is the single red 1/1. It's a pilot, so it can saddle mounts and crew vehicles as though its power were 2 greater. And when this creature dies, it deals 1 damage to any target. I do agree with you that this feels a little too small ball for the format.
Well, it's small ball without being aggressive. Like, red doesn't particularly want a defensive card like this.
And red-black is not aristocrats. Black-white is aristocrats. And so red-black doesn't really sacrifice stuff. And so then this just doesn't...
There are just better ways to get start your engines out of combat. Like, attacking with this and having it die to ping your opponent is not what you want to be doing.
I agree.
Ripclaw Wrangler was a card I had a question on going into the format. Like, I didn't think it was going to be great, but like maybe it was going to be sneaky good. This is 3 and a black for a common vehicle, 4/3. When it enters, each opponent discards a card, and it's got a crew cost of 2. Like, this, I think, is the poster child for vehicles we're talking about when we say don't put too many vehicles in your deck. Like, I think you should just basically never put Ripclaw Wrangler in your deck. And if you do that, like, you will probably win more frequently.
Yeah. Lotus Guard Disciple is 2 and a white for a 2/2 flyer. When it enters, target creature or vehicle gains lifelink and indestructible until end of turn. But where does this go? Like, what are you trying to do with it?
It just doesn't do enough. Every time I had it in my hand, I played with it several times, and I was just like, why does this not have start your engines on it? That's all I wanted it to say. And I kept playing it in decks that needed to enable start your engines, because I do think evasion's really good if you're trying to enable start your engines. And shout out to you for calling that out early on. But Lotus Guard Disciple is just not a good card, I don't think.
Yeah.
Gear Seeker Serpent. I had some questions about this. It was on the sideboard of a couple of my artifact decks. It's 5 blue-blue for a 5/6 common. Costs 1 less to cast for each artifact you control. And you can make it unblockable for 5 and a blue. It's fine. You could play it in artifact decks, but it is nowhere close to a build around. And I think the good artifact decks just don't need it or want it as a finisher, because you've got Pactual Terrors. And if this is cheap, you're already winning the game. Like, if you have that many artifacts on board and aren't behind, and then you can get yourself in spots where you do have to trade off your artifacts and are behind, in which case this is terrible. So I think all told, you're really probably hoping to not play this in the good artifact decks.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was what I sort of was expecting about it, was that we didn't have the stuff like we did in Kaladesh where you could get this out on turn 4. Like, you're just never able to turbo this out. And so, yes, you can make it cheap, but it will be cheap by the time it's turn 7 or turn 8. And then you're winning, as you're saying.
Although, I haven't played it in blue-white yet. I could see it being better in blue-white as a finisher. Because blue-white, I don't think, is good at closing out the game. Blue-white, I think, is good at slowing the game down.
I mean, I kind of agree with that. I just think this card is clunky.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly, like, nowhere close to a build around, just to get that out there.
Hellish Sideswipe is on this list for me. Single black sorcery as an additional cost to cast it. Sack an artifact or creature. Destroy target creature or vehicle. If the sacrificed permanent was a vehicle, you draw a card. I just found that there was not a ton to sacrifice happily. It was really hard to make this not feel like a 2-for-1 in my opponent's favor.
That's fair. Yeah, I think I hear that. But you would know when you wanted it, right? Like,
But I was expecting, and I think with all of our talk about removal is so, is at a premium, like makes people think, oh, well, then I'd take interaction wherever I can get it. I think this will sit out of more black decks than it will sit in.
That's fair. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I like that take. Last one is Midnight Mangler. This is 1 and a blue for the 3/3 vehicle. Crew cost of 2, and during turns other than yours, this vehicle is an artifact creature. It just doesn't quite do enough. Like you would think, oh, it's a fine 2-drop in an artifact deck. And it is. Begrudgingly playable, but like it's so bad against flyers. Like if you're trying to play defense and your opponent has evasion and like this doesn't stop them from getting start your engines, it's pretty tough.
So what are the flyers? Or like what are the decks that have a lot of flyers?
Wicker Folk Surveyor in any black deck, and you're going to be playing against that card a ton. There's Thopters running around in the format.
But we're not talking about any big flyers. Like these are all one power things. And I'm not saying that like that's still important for start your engines and yada yada.
That's what I felt. Not that I felt like I was dying to flyers, but that I needed to be able to play defense against flyers early. And this card did not meet that requirement. Dying to max speed, not dying to the damage. And then like I needed this card to play defense against max speed and it couldn't. So I don't think it's as good of a defensive card as I thought in the format.
I like that. I am extremely cautiously optimistic about this format.
Oh, I'm not even cautiously optimistic. I think I'm just optimistic about the format.
Like vehicle set, start your engines, max speed, all the stuff going into it. I was like, I don't know about this. This set might fall flat. This seems like it might just be great.
That's my current take. I really enjoyed early access. I've had a blast playing the artifacts deck. I had a blast playing blue-red cycling. Like I played against a lot of good green decks that I lost to. So despite like not, you know, being super jazzed personally to draft green, I think there are people who like those type of cards and type of decks. And that looked competitive in the format. It looked fun. And I think the thing that I like most about it is that it's a powerful format. There are certainly some banger rares, but not like an obscene amount. It's not like it didn't feel OTJ levels of rares dominating the games. And a lot of the quote unquote best uncommons, you've got to build towards them to make them good. Like your Risen Necro Regents, the Grave Titan Poop Rat, like the start your engines cards, you got to draft a good deck around them for them to be great. And then all the artifact payoffs. I just liked the synergy space, the raw rate space. Like it doesn't feel pushed all in one direction. There's a smattering of it all, and it all feels competitive. I'm really optimistic about the format.
Yeah, I'm excited to start jamming on Tuesday.
Yeah, I really like this format. So go forth, draft Grixis, conquer. thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. We've got a tier list up there, courtesy of Ben, that I'm sure will be getting updated as the days of draft progress. We've also got our episode backlog. We've got our YouTube channel, our Twitch stream, our Patreon page, our merch, courtesy of TeePublic, all of that available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.